Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, your host of CMDA Matters, a weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. It is finally spring in Northeast Tennessee, and this is one of the most beautiful times of the year. But I must admit, in the last couple of weeks, we have gone from the low 30s to 80 degrees with lots of rain and then lots of sunshine, and we've even had some snow in the mountains. It reminds me of the words in Matthew 16:3. When evening comes, you say, the weather will be fair, for the sky is red, and in the morning, today it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast. Jesus was responding at that time to the Pharisees and Sadducees that they did have some wisdom which allowed them to read the coming weather patterns. But then he turned around and rebuked them for their inability to read the signs of their times in which they were living. He goes on to say, you know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but not the signs of your times. You know, they were waiting for the Messiah to appear, and he was standing right there in front of them. Today, the storms are plentiful in healthcare. We've got COVID-19, abortion rights, physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia, transgender issues, and many others. But what do these issues mean for our future here in the United States? Well, one of the organizations that can help to bring clarity to the complex issues of our day is the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. CMDA has had a long-standing relationship with CBHD, as most people refer to them. They were founded in 1994 in order to foster Christian engagement in the bioethics arena. We've partnered with them at CMDA on their annual conference, and some of you, our members, have received your master's in bioethics from its parent organization, Trinity International University in Chicago. Well, last year, former president and CEO of CBHD, Dr. John Kilner, gave a presentation that stirred many of our members, and we heard a lot about it afterward. You're now going to hear an excerpt from that presentation, and we will give you a link to the full presentation later. Then I'm going to talk to Dr. Matthew Epinette about the significance of Dr. Kilner's presentation last year, as well as the initiatives that are underway at CBHD, how they are engaging in the discussion of these issues, as well as translating and communicating in ways that are helpful from a biblical and Christian worldview. Let's listen now to Dr. Kilner on the basis of human dignity.
To fully appreciate the significance of life, we also need to understand the significance of death. What does the Bible tell us about how we should view death? Well, the Bible doesn't sugarcoat what death often involves, calling it such names as a destructive plague in Hosea 13. Now, I've had a taste of that already myself. In the midst of an IV monoclonal antibody infusion, I wondered if death itself was at hand as I began to shake uncontrollably and to lose consciousness. A code blue was called on me because my blood pressure was plunging dramatically and couldn't be stabilized. Now, I've seen many code blues when others have been the focus, but it was weird and a little scary to be flat on my back speeding down a hospital hallway, completely surrounded by worried healthcare professionals as I wavered on the edge of unconsciousness. Experientially, dying or coming close to it can definitely be horrendous. So it's not surprising that the Bible views death as an enemy. Indeed, Paul explains in Romans 8 that the body is subject to death because of sin. Yet Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 is careful to portray death as an enemy, yes, verse 26, but as one defeated through Christ's resurrection, verse 54. And as we'll see here, both words, defeated and enemy, provide crucial guidance for engaging end-of-life challenges. If we lose the clear sense that death is an enemy, we'll be vulnerable to undertreatment, tempted sometimes to welcome death as a friend, which can even lead to assisted suicide or euthanasia. Similarly, if we lose the clear sense that death is defeated, a defeated enemy, then we'll be vulnerable to overtreatment. We'll see ourselves in a battle with death, which we must fight to the bitter end. And it can become bitter indeed, especially when we misguidedly add pain and suffering to a dying that takes place anyway, despite our efforts. We need not desperately resist death at all costs. God has assured us that death is among the many bad things that God will work together for good, Romans 8. God remakes the enemy into the entrance to a glorious eternal life with God. That's why Paul in Philippians 1 can say that to die is gain. Death remains an enemy, but thankfully, death is a defeated enemy, a doorway to something better, but only at the right time. Now let's see if we can unpack this idea of the right time as opposed to engaging in undertreatment or overtreatment. First, in order to recognize the right time, we need to come at a situation with the right intention. That is, we need to be intending life through our actions or inactions. There's a repeated discussion in the Bible regarding when killing a person is wrong and when it's not. The key seems to be whether or not ending the life was intentional, as you can see on these various passages. So we too in our healthcare decisions must intend life to echo God's directive in Deuteronomy 30 to choose life. Now, one reason we're to intend life in all that we do is that the timing of death is God's prerogative. Now, there are many places in the Bible where God says or inspires others to say, "There's no God besides me. I put to death, I bring to life." Now, why is that first line included there? "There is no God besides me." Well, I suspect that there have been people in all ages who have aspired to take the place of God by causing or helping to cause the death of someone, their own death or someone else's. Now, needless to say, in these passages, God doesn't appear to be very pleased with such efforts. Today, such efforts can take the form of so-called physician-assisted suicide. So it's worth reflecting on that form of undertreatment here. The term suicide, it's important just right off the bat to note that it's important to adopt a term for physician-assisted suicide that makes clear what the practice involves. Now, some people today, as you well know, are adopting terms like physician-assisted death or physician-assisted dying. Now, of course, physicians should be involved, should be providing assistance at the end of people's lives. But that's not specifically what this practice involves. What makes it distinctive and controversial is the fact that patients are killing themselves with means provided by physicians. Now, if the term doesn't make it clear that patients are killing themselves, then it's simply misleading and not really accurate. Proponents of the term physician-assisted death tend to be those who are most open to the practice. And it's telling that they don't want to be reminded every time they use the term that people are killing themselves. That should prick everyone's conscience. The term suicide is a convenient word in English to describe people killing themselves. Now, I suppose if one doesn't like the term suicide for some reason, then one could refer to physician assistance for people to kill themselves. Now, that's a bit cumbersome, though, so today I'm simply going to use the term physician-assisted suicide. Now, there are many good reasons why the vast majority of countries in the world and over 40 states in the United States forbid the practice. Many of these reasons are the same reasons that most medical associations, most disability rights groups have traditionally opposed the practice. This is far from being just a Christian concern, in other words. But it is indeed a great concern from a Christian perspective. It's a clear violation of the mandate to intend life. It intends death. Now, as previously explained, the ultimate root of the concern here is the fact that all people are created in the image of God. Genesis 9 observes that you can't kill any innocent human being. Why? Well, because they're in God's image. Now, it doesn't say that you are an exception, that you can kill yourself, because the ethics of killing is not about the autonomy of the killer, it's about the life of the killed. That's worth emphasizing. The ethics of killing is not about the autonomy of the killer, It's about the life of the killed. Now, as a Christian, you would know that you are not your own. You're bought with a price, 1 Corinthians 6. But it's similarly true of all people, that people's lives are not their own. It's not for them to direct their steps, Jeremiah 10. Every person exists primarily for God's purposes, not merely for their own. They must intend life for everyone, including themselves. They must not kill anyone made in God's image, even themselves.
Well, it's a great honor to welcome Dr. Matthew Epinette to the program. Matthew is the interim director of the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity there in Deerfield, Illinois, with Trinity International University. Welcome to the program, Matthew.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you've been the interim director for how long, and what's the plan for the leadership? You're in transition.
We are. It's been a year of transition that has really turned into a year of uncertainty with the current pandemic affecting the globe. And so I think to some degree, it's safe to say that plans are a little bit on hold. As your listeners may know, Paige Cunningham had been the director, executive director of CBHD since 2009. And she left to be the interim president at Taylor University. There's simply no way that she could leave there to come back to CBHD, given all that's going on in higher education with having to send kids home and making plans for next year. And so we all just plan to stay the course, continue to work together apart, and lead the various institutions that we've been called to. This whole time, one of the things I've been really reflecting on is the way in which it's been an unveiling of so many things, disparities in healthcare, our own fragility, and maybe ultimately the unveiling of the illusion of certainty. There just is a lot of uncertainty in life. Few things are certain, but God is faithful and God is certain. And so we just lean into Him and into that as we go through this time, both individually and organizationally.
Dr. Kilner, I believe, launched the program. What was his vision? What was his inspiration for this?
The center was launched out of a series of conversations back in the early 90s that Carl F. Henry and some others gathered together to try and look at these both current pressing issues and then what they could see as coming issues in the world of healthcare, medicine, technology. And the center was birthed out of that. And Dr. Kilner was the first president of the center and was in that role until 2005 or six, when he moved over to the full-time faculty of Trinity, and that allowed him to concentrate a little bit more on his writing. But the real goal for the center was to be an evangelical Christian voice engaged in the academic discussion of bioethics. Bioethics as a discipline actually began with theologians, but it became through the 70s and 80s to be increasingly secularized. And I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the principles of biomedical ethics, which are by design intentionally divorced from any kind of religious theological grounding. And so these Christian leaders just saw the need for faithful, Bible-believing Christians to be involved in these academic discussions, and then to translate that down into the academy, to students, to laity, to churches, to physicians, and to others who either needed to know for their work or wanted to know for their lives.
Well, it's not been an area that's very old in terms of an area of study and expertise. I think that Dr. Pellegrino in Washington, I believe, was one of the kind of the founders, a Christian, religious background, but it really, there wasn't a whole lot, I understand, before him. And also my understanding, a number of seminaries now across the country, I believe Trinity was probably in the early days of various seminaries that decided this is a really important area for the church to emphasize, given what you see coming. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And it touches each person in each pew. We revitalized our own podcast, and I just did an interview with one of our fellows who had been working at the center for a couple of years. And he said that one of the things that he was really struck by coming into the world of bioethics was that there are just points in time where we're all called to be kind of amateur bioethicists, where we're presented with things in our lives that we have to make decisions about. And so for a seminary to be able to provide counsel and guidance and a framework for thinking through these kinds of issues to pastors who are going to be standing in the pulpits week by week and ministering to people day by day, it's just a really powerful opportunity.
Well, we have been influenced so much by Trinity, but now we have a church commission, and a number of grads are on that church commission, and its goal, objective, is to actually help to develop a six-week curriculum for the church on bioethics developed by our members, physicians, dentists, and other specialists, and to get that curriculum into the church. So the church is influenced not just by academic institutions, but actually by some of the practicing healthcare professionals who are out there and in these churches, and that these healthcare professionals would also be involved in teaching biblically based bioethics.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Well, John Kilner, powerful influence, powerful talk segment that we just heard. Will that talk in its entirety be available to those who are listening?
Yes, we'll be putting it up in early May and making the full talk available.
Now, talk to our listeners a little bit about your annual conference, because CMDA and CBHD, we've been working together. I know Paige Cunningham reached out to me and asked who would be appropriate representative toward the end of June. I'm sure COVID-19 has had an impact upon the conference this year, but talk to us a little bit about what you've done as a way of, we've remixed our national convention. What are you guys going to do?
Well, first of all, let me just say how grateful I am for CMDA's partnership with the conference. You guys have been around and helping us out, partnering with us for as long as I have been around the center, which goes back a good 18 years now. So I'm very grateful for that. We were originally scheduled to have a conference this summer on bioethics and the body. And when it became clear that we weren't going to be able to meet in person, it just seemed a little out of place to do a bioethics and the body conference remotely.
Anachronistic.
So we're going to push that back to next year. And this summer, we're going to do a one-day online conference really focused in on the COVID pandemic. Mm. It's June 26, which is a Friday. And I believe that by then we'll have some perspective from which we can say, here are things that we've learned, here are things that we still need to learn, and here are things that we can change as we go forward. We'll be looking at things like re-examining, rethinking the ethics of triage. I mean, there's been a lot of work done on that over the past 6, 8, 10 weeks, and how's that played out? What does that really look like on the ground? The issue of moral distress and moral injury that had a particular understanding before the pandemic hit, but now I think we're coming to see a new side of moral distress and moral injury. Disparities in healthcare. I talked a minute ago about this unveiling, and certainly that disparities in healthcare have been unveiled in a number of ways, as we've seen the disease have a much more severe impact on minority communities, immigrant communities, and then just the whole problem of access to healthcare. And then to me, it raises some really interesting questions of trying to do research in the midst of this pandemic and some of the ethical questions that come up about enrolling in vaccine trials or enrolling in trials of various therapies. So these are some of the areas that we're looking at, and there'll be a few other things as well. But I'm very excited about the conference. I think it's going to be really timely, and I think it'll be a great benefit to those who are able to join us online.
These are not straightforward issues that have been thrown at bioethicists in the middle of this COVID-19 outbreak. Our own ethics committee just labored for about 3 weeks trying to come up with a couple of statements, one on the duty to care for healthcare professionals, as well as what do you do about allocation of scarce resources. And I think we should be thanking our loving Heavenly Father that we have not had quite the situation that healthcare professionals faced in Italy. It doesn't seem to me, even in New York City. Is that your understanding as well?
It is. Out of necessity, we all had to kind of plan for very worst case sorts of scenarios. And I'm very grateful for the work that the CMDA committee has done. We've got those resources linked on our website.
Great.
But yes, to date, thank God, the situation, it's been very difficult, but it has not reached the kind of trouble that it could have reached and forced some of the decisions that it could have forced.
I want to take us back, Matthew. I think some of our listeners who personally know, who have had a chance to get to know Dr. Kellner a little bit, how is he doing these days? And could you also share with me, I haven't had a chance to, what is his background specialty specifically?
He's a bioethicist and a theologian. And in fact, some of his early work was on the allocation of scarce resources, much more at that point directed at organ transplantation. And we actually have a piece on our website that he, where he went back through some of that work and thoroughly revised it and updated it in light of the current situation. It's a relatively long article, but it's very, very powerful and I think very helpful. He has leukemia, a form of leukemia that is incurable. Hmm. There are two different lines of treatment, and my understanding is that they're generally given in a particular order. So when he was diagnosed, he was immediately put on the first course of treatment, and it worked for several months and then stopped working, which is, my, to my understanding, the sort of typical route that this takes. He's been on the second line of treatment for a little more than a year now, I believe, and it's working very well. He and I keep in touch by email every few weeks. And in fact, we exchanged some emails this week and he's doing very well. He is in really terrific spirits.
Great.
He told me that he thinks of it a little like thinking of the Israelites walking through the Red Sea, that, you know, you're just overwhelmed at first at God's power and holding the water back. And then you get busy crossing and you're having conversations, you're trying to keep the family together, and you sort of lose sight of it. But then all of a sudden you realize that, you know, God's mighty hand is holding back the walls of water as you walk. And so he really does feel that God is sustaining him. He has a strong sense of calling, that he has some work that's yet to be finished, and that God's going to sustain him and see him through that.
Looking beyond COVID-19 and in faith, if Jesus doesn't come back, what are the pressing immediate issues that CBHD, you think, needs to focus on moving forward?
Yeah, I think one issue that comes up from time to time, and I think we're nearing a time where it will be good to reexamine it, is the issue of conscience in healthcare and integrity in medicine. And so we were actually planning next year's conference on that. So that'll be pushed back to 2022. And then we also want to take a step back and look at some of the larger issues of what's the nature of health? What's the nature of illness? I think a lot of times it's easy to sort of assume, well, we all know what it means to be healthy. We all know what it means to be sick. But I think for a lot of our bioethics discussions, it's good to really hone in on what do we mean by those terms? What are those experiences like? What's the experience of illness? What's the experience of health? And then, of course, the pressing issues of technology, CRISPR, genetic editing, as these become more and more realistic possibilities, do we need to go back and reexamine them? What do we know now that we didn't know the last time we thought strongly about them? And then my own area of interest is transhumanism, which of course is a small kind of vocal movement, but I think I've thought all along, there are some attitudes and beliefs that sort of underlie the kind of transhumanist mentality that we could all easily fall into in the culture these days.
Tell our listeners who just, their interest now is perked about this whole idea of studying and becoming a bioethicist. I mean, I, as a surgeon, I can honestly say, other than sitting on a bioethics ethics and research board at my hospital, I really didn't think much about it. But what does it take to get that master's?
Yeah, it's a 2-year course of study in general. We offer it through a variety of platforms, so online, sort of a hybrid of 1 or 2 weekends on campus, and then online study or fully on campus in person. And it really, there are a few courses that we offer that are sort of broad overviews of what are all the issues, what are all the ways of thinking, what are the ways of approaching these different issues. And then other courses that delve specifically into particular issues. And so, for example, I teach a class on bioethics and public policy, where we look at sort of the history of the development of the legal aspects of bioethics.
Sign me up.
And we talk about what are the ways that we can be involved in that? What are the pieces that go into legislation? And we just try and walk through all of that. And it's very interesting because I think we tend to think of the legislature as the primary locus for bioethics related laws and public policy, but the courts have a substantial role in that. And we're finding more and more that now there are administrative rules that apply to the public policy of bioethics as much as laws or court decisions.
Well, I do want to encourage our listeners to check out and to listen to the entire talk from Dr. Kilner. I listened to it yesterday. Very, very powerful. Human dignity and facing death, and that segment we heard today, of course, you can, those of you who followed Dr. Stevens' career can appreciate a little bit now why his huge emphasis on fighting physician-assisted suicide because of the influence of Dr. John Kilner. So CMDA, we have a great deal of debt that we owe to Trinity and to the center. Matthew, thank you for stepping into the gap and helping the center to continue. And who knows? I'm just waiting on God for some time and a gap in my own schedule. Dave Stevens said, Mike, if you come on board, maybe you need to consider the master's as well.
Oh, we'd love to have you. Come on.
Dr. Kilner's full talk is now on YouTube, and that link can be found on our CMDA app, our website at cmda.org/cmdamatters, or you can go to YouTube and in the search bar type in Dr. John Kilner, Dignity and Life on the Line. Well, I mentioned the CBHD conference that's toward the end of June, and this year they've changed the theme to Bioethics in Real Life, Lessons We're Learning from COVID-19. And that'll be a one-day online conference on Friday, June 16th. You can go to cbhd.org and click on conference to register. Our CMDA Life and Health bookstore has Dr. Kilner's book, Why the Church Needs Bioethics. This book has true-to-life case studies and will help you understand and engage in bioethical challenges with Christian wisdom. You can purchase his book by going to our Life and Health Resources bookstore at cmda.org/store, or just give us a call at 888-230-2637, and one of our staff will get that book in the mail to you right away. Well, I think you will agree with me that there is a spiritual battle in our culture, and we need to be equipped. Our churches need to be equipped right where we are, right where we worship. In response, Dr. Brick Lance and CMDA have put together a new church commission of CMDA. It is our sixth commission. He made a great presentation to our House of Representatives' recent virtual meeting in April, and many of you listening contributed with great ideas on how we can get this vital curriculum being developed into our churches. And many of our representatives committed to getting this into their own churches. I'm hoping that you will also help us disseminate this information, which we expect to have ready by the end of this calendar year. Currently, there are six areas of bioethics which are being made into this curriculum, and they are beginning of life, end of life issues, gender identity issues, right of conscience, addiction issues, and human sexuality. I plan on keeping you informed on when we get this curriculum, when it'll be available, and how you can access it on our website. I also wanted to give you an update on two important lawsuits, federal lawsuits. With the help of Beckett Law, a leading national religious freedom law firm, we have intervened alongside the federal government to defend the new conscience protection regulation by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. That regulation enforces several federal laws that protect you from discrimination when you decline to participate in morally objectionable procedures or prescriptions. In another lawsuit, also represented by Beckett Law, we've been defending your right to make medical and ethical judgments on transgender issues. This has been since 2016. And just the other day, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case in which we filed a supporting amicus brief. Our brief is on behalf of that organization that I'm sure you've heard of, Little Sisters of the Poor, whom the previous administration attempted to force to participate in the contraceptive mandate associated with the Affordable Care Act. And that was in spite of the Little Sisters' religious objections. To learn more about these court cases, you can just go to freedom2care.org. I want to leave you in closing with these words of encouragement today from Isaiah chapter 26, verses 3 and 4. You will keep in perfect peace those whose minds are steadfast because they trust in you. Trust in the Lord forever. For the Lord Himself, is the rock eternal. Well, until next week, what matters to you matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. God bless you. Have a great week and join spring wherever you are.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.